going shopping for Christmas. It's that time of year. We're going shopping for Christmas. Time to spread good cheer.
So who's going holiday shopping this weekend? Do you have a plan in place to avoid overspending? If not, some help is on the way during this edition of On Your Money. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Financial planner Kevin McKinley is off this week, but our guest will share with you some information and advice on personal finance issues and answer your questions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Cameron Huddleston, a personal finance journalist and the life and money columnist for GoBankingRates.com. She was also a contributing editor for Kiplinger.com. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
Thanks for being with us. Well, how do we approach the holiday shopping season? It kicks off, of course, this week. Before we go into specific tips to keep from overspending, maybe you should remind us how easy it can be to spend too much.
Well, the National Retail Federation every year surveys consumers to see how much they plan on spending during the holidays. And every year, that dollar amount increases. And so this year, the average amount that consumers plan to spend is $935, and that's for everything. On gifts alone, it's about $589. And that's a lot of money. That's a lot of money to be spending on gifts. And so certainly, it is very easy to overspend. There's so much pressure. You see the ads. You've got your kids asking you for things. You don't want to let them down. You've got family members and those gift exchanges. So it's just so easy to really empty your wallet during the holidays. And then afterwards, you're thinking, oh, my gosh, where did all that money go? And now I've got credit card bills to pay.
Yeah. And that's just the average. I know people that spend more than that when they shouldn't.
Exactly. You're right. It is just the average. And it's very easy to spend a lot more than that, especially depending on the items that are on your wish list or your family member's wish list.
Yeah, that big screen TV might take care of all of that.
Exactly. You're going to be spending, more than $500 on just the TV, depending on how big it is and what type it is.
Yeah. So what's the best way to figure out how much money we can spend on gifts?
So what you need to do, and ideally you should have done this a while back, but there's still plenty of time, especially if you haven't started shopping, because really most people actually don't do their holiday shopping until December, despite what the retailers might want you to believe. So what you need to do is look at your own budget. Figure out how much you are going to have to pay for those necessary bills, your mortgage, your rent, your utility bills, all those things that have to be paid. That's most important. And then you're going to look and see how much you have left over after you've covered your necessary expenses. And if you're, if you're nowhere close to that average, if you don't have $500 left over, which is the average, $589, which is the average spending, and you want to pay with cash, then you've got to figure out, well, what can I cut? Are there things that I can cut either in my spending, whether it's meals out, whether it's trips to the movie theater, those sort of things, or what can I cut from my gift list so that I am not going to have to rely on credit cards and end up with debt and be paying that debt for months to come? And so that might mean having some conversations with family members, and saying, instead of giving a gift for everyone, let's just draw names this year so that we're only giving a gift for one person in the family. Or having the conversation with your spouse, honey, we have income, so we can buy what we want. So do we really need to go all out and buy a big TV for each other? Or can we just maybe get a couple of token items or maybe nothing at all and just focus on the kids this year? So be willing to make some compromises and certainly figure out how much you can actually afford that fits within your budget.
And you advise that we leave Fido off the list, or Ray, in my case, my cat. Do people really spend that much on their pets at this time of year?
They do. I was surprised because I did find a statistic. There was a survey, and it found that people spend an average of $62 on their pets. which is not a huge amount compared with overall spending, but it is for a pet. And I know that people's pets are very near and dear to their heart. But if you need to limit spending this year, that is one area where you can look to cut back. You know, is your dog really going to miss getting that gift? Or will your dog even know if perhaps you've taken a chew bone from the pantry and you've wrapped it up? The dog's not going to know whether you went to the store and bought it especially for Christmas or you took something from the treat bag you already have. And if the dog expects something under the tree, wrap up something the dog already has, and maybe that's just the fun part for your pet. But I would not go out and spend a lot of money on your pet if you have limited amount to spend this year.
Yeah, I'm going to have to collect all of Ray's toys that are just all over the house and pretend they're brand new when I give them to them.
And put it in a box. Yeah. Cats love boxes,
oh, they
right?
do. Yeah, that's a good idea. And you also you also wrote a column this week that lists tips to avoid overspending. And one of them was to know how retailers get us to spend more. How are retailers trying to get us to spend more?
Well, if you're going to go into the stores, there's a greater chance that you're going to spend more than if you shop online. And I'm a big fan of shopping online because it is so much easier. So many different tactics that they use. They're going to put the items that they want you to notice and spend money on eye level, on the shelves. They're going to put it on the end of the aisles so you notice them. They're going to play those nostalgic Christmas songs so you're thinking about holidays past and those warm and fuzzy feelings. You might notice scents, like particular holiday scents, those cinnamon scents in the store. I was actually in a department store yesterday, and you walk by a section of the store and you smell that cinnamon and you're thinking, oh, it smells so nice. It smells like Christmas. It gets you in that festive mood. So many tactics that they use to get you to spend more. So really a good way to avoid overspending is to shop from home online. And most of those Thanksgiving, Black Friday deals are going to be available online as well as in store. So you don't have to fight with the crowd and feel the pressure to spend more.
Yeah, in fact, I've been seeing some news pieces that are showing that that Black Friday doorbuster is maybe not going the way of the dinosaur, but fewer people are camping out.
And fewer stores are actually offering those. Some of the deal experts I spoke with said that, indeed, you can find plenty of deals for Black Friday and Thanksgiving sales and Cyber Monday sales, and you get a wide variety of deals across, you know, various product categories. But there are not as many of those doorbuster deals, those limited items that are only available for, you know, a few hours very early in the morning. They're tending to move away from those and just offer kind of the general savings across an array of products. And oftentimes those doorbuster deals are gimmicks to get you in the door. They're not necessarily the best items. They're items that tend to be off-brand, like an off-brand TV that's at a really low price. The store just wants to unload it. You come in, you don't get the deal, so you feel defeated and you think, well, shoot, I'm here. I got up so early, I'm going to get something. Something is going in my cart because I'm not leaving empty-handed. So then you end up spending on other things that you weren't planning on buying.
Yeah. So, and you, when you make that list like Santa and check it twice, really, you recommend really stick to it.
Definitely make your list. And make your list not based necessarily on what you see is on sale, but what your family members and your friends want. Then after you have your list, then you can check to see where you can find that item at the lowest price. And there are plenty of websites that can help you do that. There's dealnews.com, bfads.net, and that's as in like Black Friday ads.net. And you'll see all the Black Friday ads listed on those sites. And so you can check which store has the items you want at the best price. You can do, you know, of course, price comparisons online at a site such as PriceGrabber.com to find the best price on the items that you actually want and not what you feel like you have to buy just because it's on sale.
Yeah. You also recommend that we not shop for ourselves. What kind of a Grinch are you, Cameron?
I must be the biggest friend. Don't buy presents for your pets and don't buy anything for yourself. But the thing is, we actually spend a lot of money buying for ourselves. That's what people do. They feel like, well, it's the holidays, I'm going to treat myself. And consumers spend an average of about $140 on themselves during the holiday shopping season.
I believe that.
So again, if you have a budget that you need to stick to, money is tight, or even if money's not tight, you just want to be responsible, you know, leave yourself off the shopping list, because, you know, perhaps there's someone in your family who's going to be getting you a gift, and let them know what you want, or let them know the gift card that you want, so that then you can turn around and do some shopping for yourself.
Yeah, I know you wrote about some money-saving apps that we can download on our phones. Is there one or two that you might want to recommend we try?
Well, if you are going to go shopping in a store, you want to have some price comparison apps, the ones that you use to scan the barcode, ShopSavvy, Red Laser, those are a couple of them. And when you're in a store, you scan the item to actually make sure that you can't get it at a lower price somewhere else. Or what you can also use those apps for is if you're in a store such as Best Buy, for example, a lot of retailers will match the prices of their competitors. You have to be careful around Black Friday, because sometimes their rules shift a little bit, but you can at least try it and say, you know, hey, look, I'm in Best Buy right now. Amazon has the same product and they're selling it for less. Will you match the price? And then you don't have to go to another retailer or go home and shop online to get it. Those are apps that you can use. There's another app that's really good. It's called Santa's Little Helper, and it's a budgeting app. And you can use it to make your holiday list, create your budget, and then kind of check off the names and items as you buy them, so that you stay on track with your budget and your gift list.
All right. Well, let's say we use some of these tips and we still wind up overspending. Maybe just some general advice that you might have on how we can get back on track financially.
So if you have used your credit card to fund your overspending, what you want to do is come up with a plan to pay it off as soon as possible. And so if you didn't cut back before the holidays and, you know, create a cash cushion in your savings account to cover those gift purchases, then you need to cut back after the holidays. You know, don't go out to eat. Don't spend on things that you don't absolutely need, so that you can pay off that debt as quickly as possible, because you need to think of it this way. You worked really hard to do your research, to get your deal so you could save money. But all those savings are going to be wiped out if you're paying interest on a credit card. So that's why you need to pay off that credit card debt as quickly as possible, so that your savings aren't really going to waste in the form of interest payments. So focus on paying down the debt, cut back if you have to, so that you can pay it off quickly. Because you also don't want your debt, your credit card debt, to get in the way of other goals that you have, you know, contributing to your retirement account, perhaps. If you're saving up for a down payment on a house, or if you're saving for your kids' college education, you don't want a one-time event, the holidays, to ruin your financial plans for the rest of the year.
Our guest is Cameron Huddleston, a personal finance journalist and the Life and Money columnist for GoBankingRates.com. She is our guest for this edition of On Your Money. Financial planner Kevin McKinley is off this week. He'll be back next week talking with her about saving and spending during the holidays and beyond. And we welcome your questions for her. We welcome maybe even your own experiences. How are you planning on staying on budget with holiday shopping this year? 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. onyourmoney@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is On Your Money on the Ideas Network. This is On Your Money on the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine, talking with Cameron Huddleston today, personal finance journalist and the life and money columnist for GoBankingRates.com. We welcome your personal finance questions at 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to On Your Money at WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Spent the first part of the program talking about how we can avoid overspending during the holiday shopping season. Do you have an idea? How do you stay on budget? Let us know. Let's see. We have it's Marcy in Manitowoc. Hi, Marcy.
Hi. This year, we do not have any minors in our family, but instead of giving gifts, I think that most of us buy things that we need for ourselves during the year, and trading gifts is just buying more material things that we probably don't need or we can buy for ourselves during the year, and you're also contributing to probably third world labor and child labor by buying things so that you can provide a service or volunteer your time instead of having to trade a gift. I think that, you know, would help with saving money.
So, Marcy, you don't have children in your family, you don't do gift giving at all in terms of going to buy something to give a gift?
Yes, this is the first year that we don't have a minor in our family, so this year we're going to pass. Maybe next year we'll do something different, but I just think buying things you don't need or just to trade for gifts is not necessarily, you know, helping people and society.
Yeah. All right. Thank you very much, Marcy. Well, Cameron, that's certainly an option. Not buy gifts at all or make gifts or at least limit the amount of gifts that you give. And you suggested that. Any other ideas along those lines?
I think her idea is good because, you know, for some of us, we get to a certain point in our life where we really have everything we need. And the holidays are about the experience. And I like her idea of volunteering. And you can do that as a family activity, you know, get your family members together and go volunteer, you know, go to a nursing home where there, you know, are people who would love to have, you know, the company there. Perhaps you have a few people who can sing really well and you go caroling. I remember doing that as a child with my family, and it's one of my favorite memories. And really, it is all about creating those memories. How often are you going to remember the gifts that you get? You're going to remember the things you do much better. So I think that's a great idea.
Yeah, that's something that I have been trying to practice over the past several years. Instead of individual gifts for all the nieces and nephews and sisters and brothers, try to get together as a family. And maybe I would pay for an event like going to a play or something like that, or going bowling. That was always a good one, where we could go bowling. And that was my present, was a family experience. So that's, you know, it may not be completely free, but it was less expensive than buying something for everybody.
And certainly more memorable.
Yeah, yeah. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. I had meant to ask you earlier, Cameron, you had talked about how food is one of the biggest household expenditures, and if we can save money there, maybe, you know, we can use that money for holiday gift giving. What are a couple of simple ways we can stretch our meal budget?
Well, again, during the holidays, one of the things you want to try to avoid is going out to eat. If you're going to be out shopping in the stores, make sure you eat beforehand, take a snack with you, something along those lines, so that you're not spending money on, you know, getting fast food, going to a restaurant while you're out. Because research shows that part of the reason people do end up spending more when they're shopping in stores is because they're spending money on those other things too, such as meals at the mall. So certainly try to cut out those meals that are outside the home. And then for your meals at home, have a plan. If you plan a menu for the week and stick to it, you're going to be less tempted to rely on fast food to, you know, get you through the week when you're busy. Have, you know, plan ahead. And a lot of people recommend, a lot of frugal living experts recommend on Sunday, take the time to cook in batches and then freeze those meals so that you can pull them out and quickly warm them up in the stove, on the stovetop, in the crock pot on a weeknight when you're busy. You know, things such as chili or pasta sauce, something that's really easy to throw in the crock pot, warm it up, and there's your meal ready to go at night when you get home from work.
Well, since this is your first time on the show, we thought we should talk a little bit more about you and your background. You wrote a column about your biggest financial regrets, and one of them was racking up $50,000 in student loan debt. Tell us what happened.
You know, it's interesting because I actually thought that I had less student loan debt until I pulled out all of my loan papers when I was writing this article. I thought I had more like $30,000 in student loan debt, and this was for graduate school. But when I pulled out those papers, I actually was kind of shocked to see that I had more than $50,000 in student loans. And, you know, maybe because I was just kind of trying to block it out for some reason, you know, how much I had actually taken out. But I was living in Washington, D.C. at the time and decided to get my master's in economic journalism. Seemed like a really good decision, and the program was great. But the mistake I made was not finding a way to earn more money while I was in school to help cover more of my costs. I relied heavily on loans. My husband was also in graduate school at the time, so he did not have income from a job. And I could have done a lot more freelancing to help cover some of the bills, but I relied solely on student loans to help cover not only my cost of tuition, but also my living costs. And I do regret that greatly because it did take years, and I was lucky. It did take years to pay it off. And I was lucky, though, because I was able to lock in a really low interest rate on those loans. It was around 3%, so my payments were not big. They were not unmanageable. I didn't struggle to pay them off. But what I did is put myself in debt for years, and I graduated from my master's program and actually was earning less annually than the amount I had borrowed. And so this is something you really need to consider when you're going, especially if you're going back to school, if you're going to get a graduate degree. Will it pay off? You know, look at, and there are plenty of resources, too, where you can look and find out whether, you know, that graduate degree is going to pay off depending on the type of career you're going into. And so it took me years, basically, for that degree to pay off, to get to a point where I was earning more than actually the loan amount that I took out.
Yeah. You, in this piece on a financial expert's biggest regrets, also said that you did a terrible job saving for retirement during your 20s because you weren't making all that much money. But you wrote that even a little bit can go a long way. Talk some more about that lesson learned.
Right. So part of that time I was in graduate school, I was in my 20s, and anyone out there who is a journalist who happens to be listening to this, you know, as you are a beginning journalist, you are not making a lot of money, and they will know, and they're nodding their heads.
Understatement.
You don't make a lot of money. And for about a year or so after school, I was living in a smaller town working for a daily newspaper, and I had the option to contribute to a 401k, which I did, but when I left that job, I cashed it out. Because I didn't realize what the consequences were. You know, not only are you shortchanging yourself in the long run because you're, you know, taking money out of a retirement account that could grow, but you also have to pay taxes on that early withdrawal and a 10% early withdrawal penalty. So I really shortchanged myself. And then I, you know, did not have the option at a couple of jobs that I worked at for a while because I had to be there long enough and able to be able to participate in the 401k accounts there. And then when I went to graduate school, I wasn't contributing to a retirement account. So basically, most of my 20s, I was barely saving for retirement. And then after graduate school, I became a personal finance journalist and realized the mistake that I had made. And it's so easy when you're younger to think that you have time. You know, and technically you do, but the sooner you start, the less you have to save. If you're saving $100, $200 a month in your 20s, that money has so much more time to grow. If you wait until your 30s, you're going to have to save 2, 3, 4 times as much each month to get to the same amount as if you had started in your 20s. If you wait till your 40s to start saving, you have to put away even more. So the sooner you start, the more time your money has to grow. And it's, people often refer to it as the magic of compounding interest. You know, you, your money grows at a certain percentage, on average around 6 or 7% in the market, in the stock market. And so, you know, grow 6% a year, and then at the end of that first year, you have more. And so as it grows the next year, it grows and grows and grows, and you don't have to set aside nearly as much as if you start at a young age than if you wait till you're older. And so I missed out on a wonderful opportunity to have a lot larger retirement account balance. So now I'm playing catch up, and so I have to contribute the maximum that I can so that I can have enough for a comfortable retirement. Yeah.
Your third regret was blowing the $25,000 you received as an inheritance when your dad passed away. You wrote that you paid off your credit card debt, but you really have no idea where the rest of the money went. What would you have done differently? What should we do differently?
Well, it was a life insurance payment, and I did use it to pay down some credit card debt. But I got that life insurance payment right at the time I was graduating from graduate school, and I could have easily put it toward my graduate school student loan debt. And then all that money that was going toward paying down student loans could have gone into retirement savings. If you get a windfall, you have to have a plan for that money. You can't just throw it into your checking account and let it sit there, because then you're going to start using that money for everyday expenses. And then you're going to say, what happened to that money? And a lot of people might be getting a bonus at this time of year. Most of us are not going to get a bonus close to the life insurance payment that I got. The average bonus is actually about $1,000 this year. So if you're getting a bonus or any sort of windfall, maybe in the spring it's going to be your tax refund, you need to have a plan for that money. Get it out of your checking account right away. Put it into a savings account so it's not as easy to touch it. But don't necessarily leave it in the savings account. Of course, if you don't have an emergency fund, a savings account is a good place to leave that money, because you should have 3 to 6 months worth of savings to cover those emergency expenses. I should say 3 to 6 months worth of expenses and savings to cover expenses. But otherwise, you know, if you've got debt, use any sort of windfall you have to pay off your high interest debt. You know, you can open a Roth IRA and put the money into savings, and then when you reach retirement age, you can take that money out tax-free. You could open a brokerage account and invest in mutual funds that way. Have a plan for the money. Don't let it just slip through your fingers, as I did, because I regret it. I could have knocked out a whole lot of my student loan debt, but I didn't, because I didn't have a plan for the money.
We were talking with Cameron Huddleston during this edition of On Your Money. She's a personal finance journalist and the life and money columnist for GoBankingRates.com. And we have lots of callers who have ideas on how to save money on gift giving over the holidays, and we will share and go to some of those calls now. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. Stephanie in Madison has an idea. Hi, Stephanie.
Hi. Another caller said that they just don't give gifts any year, or for Christmas this year. And that just reminded me what our family does sometimes. Instead of exchanging gifts that we maybe don't need, we all take the money that we would have spent on gifts for each other, and we're renting a large house where we can all stay together for a few days right after Christmas.
Where should I go, Stephanie? Just kidding.
Oh, yeah.
So there you go. Rent a cabin or a couple of cabins and have a big family reunion. That sounds good, Cameron.
That sounds like a great idea. It sounds like a lot of fun. And I am all about that, because I don't give gifts to every member of my family. My kids only get a limited number of gifts. My husband and I often don't even exchange gifts. And so I really love that idea of pooling your money and going on a family vacation. That sounds like a lot of fun.
I love that idea. Rachel in Racine is with us now. Hi, Rachel.
Hi.
What's your idea?
So what we're doing, I have teenagers at home, and we are doing the something you want, something you need, something to wear, and something to read. So that's how we're giving gifts this year. You get one of each type of those gifts. Santa might bring a gift. And then for family members, we make all the gifts.
Oh.
Crafts.
What are you making?
Oh, last year we made like little pictures out of stones. We went to the beach and collected small little rocks and made flowers and things like that and framed them really nice from Goodwill pictures. And
It's meaningful, especially if it was a vacation or something that you had. That sounds great, Rachel. And what do you think of this idea for the kids, something they want, something they need, something to wear, something to read, Cameron?
I have heard of that idea, and I think it's great. I think my kids would actually balk at the something to wear because I often hear, please don't give me clothes.
Yeah, right.
But they're not quite teenagers yet, and I know that that changes because I remember it changing for me. Suddenly I went from wanting toys to clothes when I was in high school. But I think it's a great idea, and it sets some parameters for your kids so that they just can't ask for everything. You let them know this is what you can ask for, and this is what you're going to get, which I think is great. Letting kids know that there are limits and these are the type of gifts that you're willing to get for them.
I'm sorry. I shuddered when my mom would give me clothes as a teenager, but because our tastes were not the same. But I do remember thinking, oh, great. Thanks for the socks when you're a little kid. But thank you, Rachel. I think that that's promising. Ann in Green Bay. Hi, Ann.
Hello. Well, I have a suggestion. I think it's good to shop in the resale stores, the Goodwills, the Bethesdas. You'd be amazed what you can find. You save money, and you're also doing a good turn because a lot of these shops, benefit, monies go to benefit the programs for handicapped and people of, less fortune. So it's actually a win-win. You save money, you help someone out, and you reduce, reuse, and recycle.
Thank you, Ann. What do you think of that, Cameron?
I think it's a good idea, and it also makes me think of another thing that people should consider as they're going into the holidays. Look through your closets, look through your garage, look through your attic, and see what you don't need. And either donate it, and if you itemize, you can get the tax write-off, or sell it, which is a great way to get some extra cash to cover your holiday spending. You can take it to a consignment store. You can sell it yourself on a site such as Craigslist. But turn that stuff that's just sitting in your closets into money so that you can cover your holiday spending in cash. And whether you're going to the resale store to buy the gifts or whether you're buying them, brand new and used online or in a store, turning the stuff that you're not using into cash is a great way to cover your holiday spending.
Yeah, that's a great idea. Let's go next to Lucas in Sauk City. Hi, Lucas.
Good morning.
What do you do? What's your idea?
I heard you guys talking earlier about, maybe not spending so much on yourself or buying stuff for your pets. One thing my wife and I have started to look for as we get older and realize that we pretty much have the stuff we need is that we've seen a lot of these giving trees popping up in our community that have, little tags on them that and a family code, and it's, things that are for kids, they want a Lego set or in some cases, it's they need things like they need, T-shirts and stuff like that. So,
well, that's a wonderful giving thing to do, Lucas. And if you have the means and you're able to afford buying gifts for people in need, Cameron, there's nothing wrong with that, is there?
No, I think it's a great idea because that's what the holidays is about, giving, and especially giving to those who are less fortunate. And you can make the holidays nice for someone.
We are talking with Cameron Huddleston, a personal finance journalist and the life and money columnist for GoBankingRates.com, talking with her on this edition of On Your Money on a wide variety of matters. When we come back, we are going to be talking about how to talk with our parents about financial issues, and we'll welcome your thoughts about that, and then we'll continue to take your personal finance calls with your questions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is On Your Money on the Ideas Network. The This is On Your Money on the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Financial planner Kevin McKinley is off this week. He will be back next week. We are talking with Cameron Huddleston about personal finance issues, welcoming your questions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. Well, Cameron, it may not be the most pleasant topic of conversation while we're visiting with family this week, but one that you say we may want to have, especially if we have aging parents, taking control of their finances if they are unable to do so on their own. You wrote about how you had to do this with your mother after she was diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease. I'm sorry about that. How should we go about this?
Well, you certainly don't want to bring it up during the middle of your holiday meal. You know, Mom, pass the gravy and let's talk about your money situation. That's not the time to do it. But if you do not see your parents that often, or it's rare that you and your siblings are all together with Mom and Dad, then the long holiday weekend could be an opportunity to start having these conversations. And the sooner you can have them, the better. Fidelity, which is an investment firm, actually did a survey recently, and they found that 69% of parents expect that at least one of their children will help manage their investments and their retirement finances. Yet, more than a third of their children who parents expected to help them didn't even realize that they were expected to take on this role because the conversations are not happening. And it can be an incredibly difficult conversation to have for both the parents and the children. So I would encourage adult children to actually reach out to their parents, and there are a variety of ways you can do this. Certainly what you don't want to come in sounding like is, I know more than you, Mom and Dad. And what you can do is actually come to them as if you were asking them for advice. Hey, Mom and Dad, you know, how have you planned for your retirement? Like, what? Tell me what I need to do. You know, are you, you know, do you have, you know, money and savings account, you know, in a retirement savings account? Are you relying on Social Security? Do you have a pension? What have you done as far as estate planning? Do you have a will? Do you have a power of attorney? This will help you know where your parents stand. And you're coming to them as the child asking for advice, not as the child saying, hey, Mom and Dad, I know more than you, and I want you to listen to me and what I think you should be doing, because that's going to put Mom and Dad on the defensive, and you certainly want to do that. Don't want to do that because you want the conversation to happen. Or another thing you could do is say, hey, I read an article. I read an article about how, you know, someone had to, you know, help her mother with her finances because she had dementia. And I want to be able to help you if you ever need it. So let's talk about what needs to be done. You can take that approach, you know, mention an article you read or mention, and it's okay, even if you have to make up a story. And I know that sounds deceitful, but if you have to make up a story and say, hey, I heard about this. I heard about a friend whose, you know, parents ended up in a really bad situation because they didn't have a plan. They didn't have the money to pay for long-term care. And I don't want you to end up in that situation. I don't want it to ever become uncomfortable for us because we don't have a plan. But you have to have a plan, because I will tell you that long-term care is incredibly expensive. Incredibly expensive. My mother is in an assisted living facility now that specializes in memory care. She was diagnosed with Alzheimer's at the age of 65. And we were able to wait several years before she actually needed the full-time care. We did some home health aid services for a while. She lived with me for a while. But it's about, you know, we're paying about $5,000 a month. $5,000 a month. And this is not something that Medicare covers. The only thing that will cover long-term care of this sort in an assisted living facility is long-term care insurance, and it's expensive, but it is something you should certainly consider before you get to the point when you need it, because if you need it, you can't get it.
Let me bring in a caller on this topic, Nikki Joe in La Crosse. Hi, Nikki Joe.
Oh, hi. Thanks so much for taking my call. As I was listening, one of the things that came up for me is the challenges we often face with our parents around end-of-life planning. Oftentimes, we're not exactly sure what they would want or, in fact, how they would envision what they would describe as a good death. And I know this sounds a little silly, but a good friend of mine on a national task force for end-of-life planning, she oftentimes on Thanksgiving will say, no pie until you tell me how you want to die.
Oh, no. I'm sorry.
What point I want to make here is it's really adults beginning at age 18. They talk openly and honestly about their family, with their family, about what their preferences would be at end of life, because if they don't tell us, the research on this is that the family is as likely as a stranger to guess what you would want at the end of, as you near the end of life.
Thank you, Nikki Jo. And kind of bringing this back to the financial planning too. Are you, Cameron, saying that you know we talk to our parents about finances and managing finances and the possible need for us as the child to help them manage their finances, but also talk to them about living will and how they might want to die?
It's very important to include that as part of your conversation. It is so true. You don't want to leave your family members guessing what you want, because that could end up leading to fighting, you know, and you don't want your children fighting about what to do when they are in an emotional state. And so those are conversations that people should have. And I know some people are very reluctant because it is a morbid topic. You know, who wants to talk about dying, especially during the holidays? I think it's kind of funny, the no pie until you talk about how you're going to die. But it is a conversation that people need to have. And I know, especially in some cultures, people feel that, you know, if you're going to talk about death, that means you are almost, you know, you're sentencing yourself to death right then. It's, and I have friends who, and my husband in particular, who is from Ukraine. And it's so taboo in certain cultures to even talk about it, because, you know, it's assumed that if you're talking about death, then it's you're bringing it upon yourself. Yeah. But you want to tell your parents, you know, mom and dad, I want to respect your wishes more than anything, so I need to know what your wishes are. And my mother actually made it very clear, you know, as I remember, like, you know, probably from a young age, talking about what she wanted. So I knew what she wanted before her memory started going. My father, who unfortunately passed away at a young age, he was 61 and had a heart attack, never told us what he wanted. And so, and then my parents had divorced and gotten remarried. And so then that comes into play, because my stepmother wanted one thing, my sister and I wanted another, and we didn't know what my father wanted. And so it creates a lot of tension. So it's such a good idea to have those conversations about what you want. And then kind of going back to the long-term care issue, you know, having that conversation too with your parents, not just what they want at their time of death, but what sort of care do you want as you get older? You know, mom and dad, if you really want to stay in your house, then we need to start looking at ways to prepare it for you to make it easy to live there. You know, perhaps making it a lot more user-friendly, for lack of any better way to put it. You know, putting, you know, safety bars in the bathroom, and perhaps moving a bedroom that's upstairs to a ground floor level. Or, you know, let's go look at, you know, facilities, retirement facilities in your area to choose a place where you would like to be. So I know where you want to go if we need this sort of care for you. And look at the cost and what's going to fit within your budget, whether you have long-term care insurance or whether you're going to have to pay for it out of pocket, so that you know what they want and you're not having to guess yourself.
Thank you to Nikki Jo for the call. We have time for a couple more calls on a couple other issues. Let's go to Erica in Green Bay next. Hi, Erica.
Hi, thank you. I have a daughter who's 22 who graduated from college and thankfully is gainfully employed, but she's a real shopper, and all she wants for Christmas is money to help pay down her bills. And I'm not sure, her dad and I aren't sure, we just want to give her cash. We want to make sure that that money goes somewhere that it's really needed. So any suggestions?
That's a tough one. And what if you want to make sure it goes somewhere where it's needed, you could actually perhaps offer to pay a bill for her and go online with her. You know, maybe she comes over Christmas morning, you say, okay, let's log on to your credit card account and we're going to, you know, I'm going to make a payment to that account right now so that you ensure, and hey, look, I just helped you pay whatever, $100. $200, whatever it is you're willing to pay, so that you ensure that you're actually, that your money is actually going toward what she says she wants it to be used for.
Thank you, Erica. Good luck. Sarah in Appleton is with us. Hi, Sarah.
Hey, good morning, Joy.
Morning.
So for holiday spending, what works for me, first of all, I'm a single parent of two boys with lots of wants, ages 6 and 3. So what works for us is cash. Cash works because it limits our spending. We start saving in October every week. And then the boys, my oldest obviously can do this. He'll make a list of what a current listener or a previous listener had said, you know, what we want, what we need, you know. And then we go ahead and take the cash, and whatever cash we have, that is how much we spend.
Uh-huh.
So that way we know that we have, you know, enough. And we don't overspend. Last year, I was unemployed during the holiday season. And so I'm pretty frugal, you know, during the holidays. I don't overspend. But we do have a very nice Christmas. And sometimes we take that cash, what we have left over, and we go to a local hotel with a pool. And then we take, you know, the kids and we do some swimming. And it's just really fun.
Nice, Sarah. That's not happy holidays. Cameron, briefly, how about don't bring the plastic, just bring the cash?
It's a great idea, especially if you know that you have a tendency to rack up credit card debt and carry a balance. And I recommended it in my piece for Go Banking Rates that you should shop with cash because it's a surefire way to help you stick to your budget. Once the cash runs out, then your shopping ends and you're not going to exceed your budget.
Yeah. And I promised that we were going to talk about one more topic, and we only have about a minute or so to go. So very briefly, let's suppose a friend or family member comes to us and says, I need to borrow some money. Can you help me out? What do you recommend we say?
Right. And it certainly might be coming around the holidays because they need money to help buy gifts for the kids.
Yeah.
Here's my advice. If a friend or family member asks you for a loan, if you cannot afford to give that money and say goodbye to it forever, then you need to say no. Do not make a loan. Give the money as a gift if you can afford it. Then you will eliminate awkward situations going forward if that family member doesn't repay you, and you will not be struggling financially if you are waiting for that money to come back to you, because it probably won't. You know, a survey had found that most people who borrow money from friends and family do not repay the money. So unless you can give the money as a gift, do not make loans to friends and family members, because it will make it awkward and it could put you in a bad financial situation too.
Last question. What are you working on now? What are you writing next?
Today I'm writing an article about why Santa Claus doesn't spoil my kids. And like some of these other parents have said, my kids know that there's a limit to what they can get. And a lot of times parents feel like their kids say, well, if you're not going to get it for me, Santa's going to get it for me, and the sky is the limit with Santa. And I let my kids know from an early age, the sky is not the limit with Santa. You can ask him for a few things, but you're probably only going to get one or two, and you need to understand that. And they know that now. They know that Santa does not bring them everything they want.
Very good. Thank you very much for being with us. Cameron Huddleston, personal finance journalist and the Life and Money columnist for GoBankingRates.com. Financial planner Kevin McKinley will be back next week. I'm Joy Cardine. This is On Your Money on the Ideas Network.